Welcome to OncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. OncLive On Air is a podcast from OncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Daniel P. Petrylak, MD, a professor of medical oncology and urology, the chief of genitourinary oncology, and a co-leader of cancer signaling networks at Yale Cancer Center. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Petrylak discussed current issues with genetic testing and disease management in prostate and bladder cancer, including the difficulties that arise when obtaining tissue samples and deciding when to do testing. He also explained some of the reasons for poor testing rates and emphasized the importance of proper multidisciplinary management during testing and when seeking to mitigate adverse effects. Additionally, Dr. Petrylak discussed intriguing results regarding the combination of abiraterone acetate and olaparib in prostate cancer, and shared how organizations such as Fans for the Cure are raising awareness about the importance of early cancer testing and helping to alleviate diagnostic disparities. Thank you so much, Dr. Petrylak, for joining us on an episode of OncLive On Air. How are you doing today?
Great. How are you today?
Good. Happy to have you with us to discuss some issues around genetic testing in prostate cancer and bladder cancer, plus the importance of multidisciplinary management in both diseases. So starting off, can you just provide some background on the testing rate in prostate cancer and explain why this is a problem?
So from what I understand, from several surveys that have been done, only about half of patients are having next-generation testing or sequencing for metastatic prostate cancer. And this is a problem because there are two targets which we really do need to be aware of. One are those of DNA repair, actually all of DNA repair, specifically BRCA and microsatellite instability. For those patients who have DNA repair mutations, olaparib is FDA approved if the patients have received abiraterone and prednisone or any other next generation antiandrogen. And rucaparib is approved for those patients who received next generation antiandrogen and a prior taxane. So this has important therapeutic implications because both of these drugs could be administered in those patients who have, in the case of rucaparib, it's limited to those patients with BRCA1, BRCA2, but for a more broader panel of DNA repair mutations for olaparib. Additionally, it's been shown that microsatellite instability marks for those patients who respond to pembrolizumab, and that pembrolizumab is FDA approved in those patients. Now, this only represents about 2% of all prostate cancer patients, but nonetheless, this treatment can make a huge difference in a patient's quality and quantity of life.
So what do you think are some of the reasons that we're seeing such poor testing rates?
I think it's accessibility. Previously, we've only used tissue to evaluate these particular markers. Now we have liquid biopsies that can be performed fairly easily from blood specimens to look for these particular mutations. So I think it's the lack of thought that tissue needs is needed for all these patients, number one, and that is a problem in some situations to obtain the previous tissue. Additionally, prostate cancer is a metastatic disease, has a high proportion of patients who only metastasize to bone, and that is often difficult to biopsy. And again, the liquid biopsies can be useful in this situation.
So then with that said, what are your thoughts on the PROPEL trial, which was presented at this year's GU symposium and showed benefit with olaparib and abiraterone, but regardless of HR status?
Firstly, the PROPEL trial was performed in those patients who have not had a next generation antiandrogen as prior therapy. So the issue with the PROPEL trial is how applicable it is to 2022. Drugs such as abiraterone, enzalutamide, apalutamide are FDA approved in the hormone-sensitive state, and we may see the approval of darolutamide in that particular situation. So this trial excluded those patients who had prior treatment with next-generation antiandrogens. Having said that, I think it's important to see that there seems to be synergy between these two drugs, abiraterone and olaparib, particularly in those patients who have DNA repair mutations. And the question, of course, is if a patient progresses, should we continue the next generation and add the olaparib in this situation? We really don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's an important one. Again, because the field has changed since this trial was initially designed. There does seem to be a trend towards improved radiographic progression-free survival in favor of the combination in the in all patients. I still want to see the final survival data before we use this as standard of care, but I think the results are intriguing.
Do you see this trial or others like it impacting the rates of testing that we're going to see?
I think that you still need to know the status, particularly with microsatellite instability. That, again, is a small percentage of patients that have this particular mutation. And again, we have a drug for it. So I think we still should test our patients regardless. We may find out, for example, that you do get more of a benefit in the BRCA patients. And I think it's important for the patients to know from a prognostic as well as predictive standpoint.
So then with that said, when should testing be done?
It depends upon the patient, of course, but in all patients, it should be done at the beginning of castration-resistant disease. The question, of course, is in early patients, who should we do testing in? Clearly, a patient has a positive family history. Young patients, patients with aggressive disease, also particularly the cribriform variant, those tend to be positive for BRCA. And I think it's important, again, to know this up front because it not only impacts the patient, but their families as well. If the patient is positive for BRCA, then the sisters, the daughters need to be counseled about screening for breast cancer as well as for ovarian cancer.
Now, of course, we're talking about metastatic prostate cancer, but ultimately the goal is preventing the disease altogether. So what are your thoughts on resources like Fans for the Cure, which seek to improve early detection?
I think Fans for the Cure is doing a great job in spreading the word that patients should be checked, particularly with a strong family history. This is a foundation that's led by my friend Ed Randall, who is a sportscaster, and he has reached out to the minor league baseballs, as well as a number of different people within the baseball family to help move screening and detection up front. This is particularly important for African-Americans who have a higher rate of prostate cancer, and this may be more aggressive. So this may be one way of helping to alleviate the disparities in diagnosis that occur with this disease.
Now, turning to bladder cancer, targeted therapies have also gained traction with the first agent, erdafitinib, earning approval in 2019. Are you seeing similar issues with testing in bladder cancer?
We should routinely check for FGFR mutations in metastatic patients with bladder cancer. There isn't this whole genetic issue that goes on with the family with that particular marker, but nonetheless, it should be tested. It's 10% of patients, and that, again, is another tool in our therapeutic armamentarium against bladder cancer. So there is a drug, as we said before, erdafitinib, which will target that particular mutation.
And then briefly touching on other agents, erdafitinib vedotin was also approved in 2019, but one of the common adverse effects associated with the agent is neuropathy. How does multidisciplinary management come into play when it comes to adverse effect management?
Well, we've been working with enfortumab vedotin since 2012 in phase one studies. We've seen neuropathy, and there was also a sister drug, which had a different target on the bladder cancer cell, but also delivered MMAE, the active chemotherapeutic agent. And we did see neuropathy with these patients. The key in treating patients with neuropathy is to recognize it early, to either dose reduce or dose delay patients, even though they may be reluctant to do so, because I often comment that this is like running a marathon. You don't want to use or sprint up front because you're not going to have enough left for the race later on. If you catch the neuropathy early and administer agents such as Lyrica or other drugs that are targeting the neuropathy. Additionally, physical therapy does help our patients. So implementing things early is critical. So the healthcare providers who are involved in taking care of these patients, the physicians, the nurse practitioners, the practice nurses, all need to recognize this. And this is why the multidisciplinary approach is important. And then, of course, bringing physical therapists in to help the patients out. Again, we have to be sure that the patients are not debilitated from the care that is actually helping the cancer.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else you'd like to emphasize before we close?
This is turning out to be a golden era for prostate and bladder cancer. We're seeing the identification of new targets and drugs at an unprecedented rate, and testing of our patients is here to stay. And as we develop newer treatments, we'll probably have more tests, and it's important for us to communicate those different changes and tests to community practices so they know what to look for and how best to take care of their prostate and bladder cancer patients.
Perfectly said. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Petrylak. It's always a pleasure.
Great, thank you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.